welcome to another edition of Gateway to Baseball Heaven. I'm your host, Daniel Chaputo. C70 at the bat, at C70 with me as always, Tara Wellman. Tara Wellman on Twitter and Bird Seeds on the YouTubes, as they say. We are recording this Sunday night, July 30th, which means that the Cardinals have played their last game in July. They've played their last game before the trading deadline. And Tara and I will get into this whole trading deadline thing, whether there's going to be a thing or not. That's still kind of debatable. But before we do that, we really have to jump back a couple of days to hit the big topic of the weekend before it kind of got overshadowed by actual games. And that was Yadier Molina taking, you know, just like players of old, when they've always had a beef, they go to Instagram. That's the way you do it. And
old school, classic Yadi.
That's right. I mean, you know, you wouldn't expect anything else from the grinder that Yadi is. Yadi comes out saying, you know, basically blasting Matheny, which, you know, again, at the time we weren't sure if it was Matheny or the media. Turned out it was Matheny, which was a little surprising. Saying he's not tired, he's ready to play every single day, and he'll tell you when he's tired, that kind of thing. Tara, let's look at the situation first, and because I think it's one of those rare times we're going to defend Mike Matheny, so we probably ought to do it. Yadi, you know, he leaves, I think this was, say, that was Friday, Thursday, Wednesday night's game. Mike Matheny actually sees him limping a bit. He was not referencing, at least according to Matheny, not referencing being tired, more injury. And then Carson Kelly catches the next night, and you know, the comments come out in the paper. Yadi really does Yadi's thing. We've said this before. Yadi needs to rest.
Yeah, and you know, it's been interesting watching the reaction to this story because, for years, we've been basically begging Mike Matheny to insist that Yadier Molina rest more than he does, and that's not a knock on Yadi's preparation or his competitiveness, or even, you know, his physical ability. It's just the reality of being a catcher who plays 140 plus games a year. You know, that takes a toll, and we've kind of said if anybody should know that, it should be Mike Matheny. Is it not better to rest Yadi on a more regular basis in order to keep him at that high level later into the season, particularly in years where you're playing for a long run in the postseason? So in that respect, I think this is exactly what Mike Matheny should have done, whether what he saw from Molina was being tired or being hurt or being a little less sharp than normal. He did, by all accounts, the right thing in choosing to give him the day off and let Carson Kelly, who is supposed to be the heir apparent to Yadier Molina and will only get there if he actually gets to play some games at the major league level, letting him catch Weaver, who he's much more familiar with than Yadi is anyway. So I think on that side of this equation, it was everything that we've wanted Matheny to do in Yadi's case. I think that, and I'm sure we'll get into this part of it a bit more, but in my opinion, what it does after having both guys basically double down on what they said, it brings to light a much more involved issue that I think is the real story, not so much what Yadi said or what Mike Matheny said or what should or shouldn't have been done on Instagram.
Yeah, it definitely has opened a crack that we can dive into at points, and makes for some interesting discussions. And again, we're not necessarily informed discussions, but that's never stopped us before. but we, you know, from the outside looking in, we can see some of these things. You pointed out that, you know, Mike Matheny's usage of Yadier Molina is a bit strange because Mike Matheny is a former catcher. And I get that Mike Matheny was one of those guys that wanted to play every day, and I don't know if it's some sort of wish fulfillment to let Yadier Molina do this, but you would think that he would realize, I mean, he's not been out of the game just a whole long time before he got this, but he was out for a few years. You would think he would realize that rest made some sense. I just haven't really quite figured out the dynamic between Yadier Molina and Mike Matheny. You would think, you know, two catchers, they'd have, you know, Yadi came up under Mike, they'd have some sort of, you know, bond and shared experience and stuff like that. But it just doesn't feel that way. I mean, you've seen Yadi go to Instagram a couple other times with some stuff. I remember one picture that got put up was of him and Tony La Russa, and I think it was Jim Leland. And Yadi puts in some sort of comment about best managers ever or something like that. And granted, those are some legendary managers, but, you know, neither one of them are your current manager, and that could be taken a little bit wrong. I mean, what is it? I mean, what do you think? And again, they both say they respect each other. I'm not sure exactly how respectful it is to go to Instagram instead of talking to Mike Matheny. But, you know, they continue to say that they're it's not a big deal. But, I mean, what is this relationship?
You know, I think that's something that I think that's a piece of this story that is pretty significant. Say what you want about the Instagram post or whether Yadi should have reacted the way he did or what Mike really meant or wherever you want to go with that. I think the more interesting and the more significant pieces of this story are elsewhere, and this is one of them, because for a long time I think that we've all kind of just assumed, and I can't really speak for anyone else, but I have just sort of assumed that the relationship and the bond between Matheny and Molina was more along the lines of what we've heard from Matheny and Wainwright, and to the detriment of some of the game decisions at sometimes even, because I think we've talked about this before, in a few cases with some of those older veteran players on the team who were in the game when Mike Matheny was, who are familiar with him just from being around the organization and in some cases would have called him a friend prior to him being their manager, there seems to be a different level of communication, a different level of expectation, and even, you know, Mike Matheny has been a bit more defensive of some of those players at times than others. And to this point, it has seemed like Yadi was one of those guys. I mean, Matheny has really come to Yadi's defense in a couple of instances and has stood by his catcher and has explained away the reasoning for why he plays when we think he shouldn't. And all of those things have lent themselves to, at least for me, the public getting this idea that he and Yadi are close in a personal relationship as well as in the manager player relationship. I think this seems to point to evidence on the contrary. I mean, they can say that they respect each other all they want. I think there's a difference in respecting someone as a person and liking the way that they're doing their job. And I think that Mike Matheny's comments about how this stemmed from something that started in Chicago the week prior, and how he wasn't surprised by Molina's reaction and he saw it coming and he expected there to be something. All of that seems to be very obvious evidence of a bit of a crack, if nothing else, in that relationship that we would have had no other reason to think otherwise of until this point.
Yeah, and it was so noticeable that, you know, Yadi, I mean, again, he faced the media immediately, and you can give him credit for that. He was there early on Friday, and he spoke, and he didn't back down. He said, hey, this is what I think.
Yeah.
But it was interesting that he talked to the media before he talked to Matheny. You know, Matheny kind of...
As did Matheny.
Right, and Matheny did too, although they both kind of said they had, you know, Mike kind of played it off, so they had discussed this stuff before, and but it's kind of like what you said. I think it was not this specific thing. It was a little bit more of their general crossways-ness, if that's just not even a word, but who cares. So they weren't talking to each other about this situation, which, again, you can use the word respect, but I don't know that you know what that word means when you're using that kind of thing. you know, it's just one of those things. You can talk bad about your manager to your coworkers. You can talk bad about him to your friends. You can talk bad about him to him. But once you put out, especially as a player, out on the public, you know, social media, that you're talking bad about your manager, that's never going to go well. And I mean, that is something that's spread far and wide. I mean, of course, Deadspin picked up on it. Some of the others picked up on it. And the problem becomes, of course, like most stories, that gets out there and everybody sees that and everybody says Yachty and Mike Matheny are on the outs and stuff like that. And even if it's not true, even if there's an explanation for it, that explanation never makes it nearly as far.
Right.
So you've got some fence mending to do. Now, what may be the most interesting thing of this, and I know you and I have talked about this a little bit since it happened, is not, as you said, not the post and not where it came from, but partly the fact that there were a significant number of Cardinal players that came along and liked Yadier Molina's post. And again,
yeah,
we're splitting hairs. This is such a 2017
it's like the
story.
I was going to say, the 2017 story of all time.
Yeah,
I mean, who liked the Instagram post?
You know, back in the 80s, they had, you know, the criminologists, because they would pour over these pictures of the Soviets and try to determine who was out and who was in by basis of where they were standing in these pictures and things like that. And that kind of feels like the same type of thing here. But we did see. We saw Tommy Pham. We saw Dexter Fowler. We saw Sam Tuilagalava, Greg Garcia, Colton Wong. I think maybe even Kevin Sechrist come along and like this. And again, you know, we talked about this a little bit on the other show, Meet Me Unusual. There are, you know, it could be that they just, you know, some people go through Facebook and I'm sure Instagram and just kind of like everything as a place marker of what they've seen. Sure. Some people probably liked it as, you know, they saw it as Yachty saying, hey, I train well, I train for playing all the time. And they're like, yeah, you do. And supporting Yachty in that regard. But the third option is they were kind of backing Yachty in this rift with the manager. Now, if that's the case, and we don't know that, we're not in the clubhouse, but if Mike Matheny has got a significant bunch of people not on his side, we've talked about it before, if he can't hold the clubhouse, what is he here for?
Right. You know, it seems to be that the case with a lot of these guys, that there have been some public instances of disagreements with Mike Matheny, maybe not to this extent. The Colton Wong story is one that everyone's very familiar with. I think that the Tommy Pham situation is one that people are becoming more familiar with, and Tommy Pham is going about it the right way in that he's just continuing to play well. But a number of those guys are players. I think Sam Tuivailala could be in that group as well, that may have reason to have a bit of a beef with the manager for one reason or another. So I think when you see some of those names pop up together, it's real easy to try to formulate this opinion that they're expressing alongside Yadier Molina. You know, it's very hard to come to a conclusion without being in the clubhouse, but I do think that there's enough talk, there's enough evidence, there's enough, there have been enough instances of things like this happening that, it gets harder and harder to think that there's nothing wrong. And if the clubhouse is not a place these guys want to be, not because they don't get along with each other, but because they don't like their boss, it suddenly becomes much harder to continue to, I don't know, find the right motivation, the inspiration, the whatever. And I know, you know, there are going to be people who say, if you're a Major League Baseball player and you're not motivated to win every day you come to work, then you shouldn't be a Major League Baseball player. And I get that. But put anybody in a situation where they are feeling like they're always in conflict with their boss, and you're probably not going to get the best out of them. I've been in that situation professionally, and it's not as easy as just coming to work and doing your job anyway. If there's that constant level of tension and pressure, in the workplace, whatever that workplace is. So if that's the case, and the more we hear, the more we see, the more people that you talk to, it seems like that seems to be more and more the case every day, then you have to look at Mike Matheny as perhaps the source of that. He's the guy that's supposed to be the leader, and you can lead in a lot of different ways, but I don't think creating an environment where no one wants to be is leadership. creating enough of a problem where where reasonably the national face of your organization is willing to make a spat public on social media, it has to get pretty bad as far as I'm concerned. And that reflects quite poorly on the one part of the management job that Mike Matheny is supposed to be good at. And we keep going back to that. And I know it's easy to point fingers at the manager and not maybe the, as Mo put it, attitude and culture of the players. But a lot of times that attitude and even the culture is a reflection of the environment created by the person at the top. And in this case, that has to be Mike Matheny.
Yeah, and you do wonder, you know, if there is this groundswell of discontent, and we see, I mean, because you could make the argument that what we see poking out in this story, or in the Tommy Pham story, or in the Colton Wong story, could just be, you know, the excess, you know, reaching the top, that there's a lot more that we don't see underneath. It doesn't mean that there is, but there could be. If that's the case, you wonder, you know, what is the front office doing about it? I mean, you know, Bill DeWitt, the owner, comes out and backs Matheny in this Instagram bit. You know, John Mozeliak has obviously been a very vocal supporter of Mike Matheny over the years. Although I will say, when we were at Blogger Day this year, that it seemed a little bit more strained than it had been in the past, but it's still fairly solid. And like I said, if the owner and team president are fine with Matheny, it's harder to remove him. But you wonder how much do they know? I mean, how much is there a way for the players to, you know, express their discontent to the people that can actually do something about it?
Yeah, I think that's the key in a lot of this is what are the players willing to say? And that's a tricky situation because, you know, especially in season, nobody wants to end up not playing because they went and told on Mike Matheny. Right. They don't want to necessarily start something or you know, push the snowball down the hill when they're close enough in the division to still be trying to contend. I know that that's a tall order in and of itself, but I can see where even guys like Tommy Pham or, Yadier Molina, who's evidently quite discontent with the way things are, either they don't feel like their voice will be heard or they don't want to make a big deal about it in the middle of the season. I don't know, just as kind of a little bit of a rabbit trail there, I don't know which one of the players or which players as a group have the clout, I guess, to be the ones to go over Mike Matheny's head if there's an issue and talk to John Mozeliak or Mike Gersh or Bill DeWitt. I mean, I guess maybe you could say Adam Wainwright would be that guy if he's also lost some level of loyalty, if you will, to Mike Matheny, because he's been pretty vocal about that in the past. I feel like it has to get pretty bad to lose Adam Wainwright in the clubhouse. So I don't know if it's there yet, but From what I've heard, from what I've been told, it's probably not far off. And I think this thing with Yadier Molina is evidence of that. But all of that to say, to get back to your point, it's a tall order for those guys to go over Mike Matheny's head to try to get something done, if that's what the source of the problem is. So it can't be easy for any one of them to figure out how to do that and to do it in the right way and to maybe not hurt themselves or the others who would be in agreement by putting names to the disgruntled opinions. I feel like there's a lot to it if you're asking players to basically out their manager, and that's not the way that these guys come up through the game. You know, that's not the way that they're taught to relate to a manager or to a coaching staff, and especially one who in many cases was a friend or at least an acquaintance of a number of these players beforehand. So I would feel pretty confident in saying that the guys at the very top probably don't know the reality of what it's like in the clubhouse because they're not there. And I would also say that I feel pretty confident that if they ask Mike Matheny how things are going, his story is going to be very different than that of these players who seem to be unhappy with things. Not necessarily because he's this horrible, dishonest person, which he may well be. I don't know Mike Matheny personally. That's never really been characteristics that he's been described as, but people have been wrong before. But I think that he probably just has, first of all, his job to protect in some respects, but also just a different view. It would not surprise me at all if he just doesn't get it. Like, he doesn't get why it's a problem, because that seems to be a common perception of how he handles some of those things.
Given the lack of communication we have seen on the field, it might not be a big surprise that Mike Matheny thinks everything's hunky-dory and there's this whole, you know, upsurge of discontent. Now, I will say, and you're right, I agree that the players probably shouldn't go over their boss's head, if it will, to their boss's boss without some significant reasoning for it. And I do think Adam Wainwright is a guy that could, if he wanted to, or if he wanted to represent the players, just because, you know, what are you going to do to Adam Wainwright? But I also think that the front office takes some blame on that. I mean, this is communication goes both ways.
Yep.
And if I'm in the front office and I'm seeing, a story about Colton Wong come out, and I'm seeing the story about Yadier Molina, especially Yadier Molina, who you would think, just, you know, like we do, they should have a good relationship. Something's blowing up. Why is this happening? Talking to some players about this, and again, I think a player is more likely to at least express some of their reservations if the front office comes to them. They still may be hesitant to do some, but I think they're more likely to if they're asked like that.
Right.
But, you know, it doesn't appear that that's the way that communication goes that way. But, you know, I think about just talking about things. You know, Mo said at the Blogger Day, you know, he would see things, some splits, some of the sabermetric stuff. And he said he didn't want to be the guy that's, you know, micromanaging and sending notes down to the dugout that they need to be doing this or doing that. He gives them a lot more free reign, for better or for worse, and I kind of feel like he's probably gives Mike the free reign to take care of his clubhouse, but that also, you know, leaves you open to a situation that we may be seeing where it's bad and nobody that can do anything knows about it.
Yeah, you know, I think to compare it to another situation that we've seen all too often with the Cardinals, It feels a lot like when last year, all of a sudden, the relief pitchers started dropping like flies, and we found out, oh, they've been injured all season, but no one knew about it. I feel like it's similar to that in that a lot of these guys aren't going to come to you and say, I don't think I can pitch today. But if they can't hit their spots and they can't throw with the velocity that they're accustomed to, and all of a sudden they're completely ineffective, my first thought is probably going to be, okay, let's figure out why. And if it's not mechanics, then we should probably check out your arm. It doesn't seem like that's the thought process that goes on most of the time with the medical staff for the Cardinals. And I know we give them a hard time, and I certainly couldn't do their job any better than they do, but they're not paying me to do their job either, so there's that. but I think that this feels very similar to me in that it's very obvious to everyone watching that something is wrong. And instead of proactively trying to figure out what the problem is, what the source of the problem is, not just why the results are poor, they're just kind of waiting around until someone figures it out and tells them. And that's purely an assumption based on how we've seen them go about this business, not just this year, but in the last several years as well. But it's hard to imagine them handling it in a different way than they've handled some of those medical situations, because that seems to be the way they do business, for better or worse.
Well, here we have almost gone half an hour. We still haven't gotten into the trade stuff, so let's shift gears real quick. It's the beauty of not being on Blog Talk anymore. We can go a little long if we need to. And speaking of doing business as usual, I think that's a decent way of transitioning here. The Cardinals have come into the trade deadline. They're 4.5 games now out. It feels a little different when you're 4.5 games behind the Cubs than when you're 4.5 games behind the Brewers, especially when the Cubs are playing more like what the Cubs have seen. And now, they've already made the drill for Jose Quintana. Looks like they're close to getting Justin Wilson from the Tigers to shore up their bullpen. It feels like that the Cardinals may have missed their shot at the Cubs. You know, if they were up, have played well in the first half, this wouldn't be a different issue. Cardinals have not done anything yet. Lance Lynn pitched today. He's obviously been one that's been rumored to go. Tara, when 3 o'clock rolls around tomorrow? I think that's the deadline. What's going to have happened? Is anything going to have happened?
You know what? I will not be surprised if nothing happens. I think John Mozeliak has made some comments recently that allude to this idea that he doesn't really think they're worth it, which is pretty brutal, honestly, considering it's the roster he put together. But nonetheless, I think it's hard to feel like this is a team that's close enough to being good enough to put a whole lot of work into for this season. That said, I think it's a bit short-sighted to do nothing when you could move some pieces around, try to see what you have, in the hopes of clarifying what 2018 should look like or what the off season should look like. It's really hard to, and I think it was Derek Gould that tweeted about it, yesterday or today, but the Cardinals had a record number of tickets sold yesterday, which doesn't make any sense to me why random Saturday in July, but nonetheless, and you know, they're again pushing that 3.3 or so million fans mark for the season. You kind of feel like they on some level owe the people coming through the gates something. and we've talked about it too, in that it's not going to take a lot for them to start losing some of those people when they aren't playing good baseball, when there is this conflict within the team, whether they want to acknowledge it or not, and then when they stand pat at the trade deadline and don't do anything to make themselves better, whether it's for the rest of this season or the future. So I won't be surprised if they don't do anything, but that that won't eliminate the disappointment in the reality that they're just seemingly content to wait till the off season to do anything to make this team better.
Yeah, I mean, you said it last week. Pick one. You know, yeah. Sell, buy, do something. And I think that's where the fan base really is right now. I mean, even if you traded Lance Lynn, and even if you, you know, dealt a couple of outfielders, which so desperately needs to happen, you know, at least people would say, okay, fine. You know, we saw some action. You know, we saw it last year with the Yankees. Sometimes you trade off as a seller and things click and you make that run. It could still happen. But, you know, to hold on to all these pieces and then just wait feels like, I mean, you're just perpetuating the stereotype, for one thing.
Right.
That the ownership just cares about money, which I've never bought into entirely. But two, that this front office is not willing to do what needs to be done. That they're just kind of content to, you know, hesitate, poke around. You know, if something falls in their lap, maybe. I don't know if they're afraid of, I mean, they shouldn't be afraid of being burned on a trade, because they never have been, for the most part. I mean, the worst trade of John Mozeliak's career is the Colby Rasmus trade, and they got a World Series out of it. So,
right.
You know, I mean.
So do something. Yeah,
make more bad trades. I mean, obviously that's the key here. But this idea of trading an outfielder for a middle relief arm. You know, Derek Gould tweeted tonight that, you know, maybe the Cardinals were looking at Joe Smith from the – and that's actually his name. I don't want to say. That's just – I mean, that's actually the player's name. from Toronto. And, I mean, that's just – yay. I don't want to say that as I mean, there are times when that works. That doesn't work for this team.
Yeah.
You can go get a back of the rotation or back of the bullpen guy. You know, you could argue that that's enough to push. I mean, if you go out and get a Zach Britton, you could make an argument, as bad as this bullpen is, you shore that up, and hopefully you gain the ground. I don't think you can catch up with the Cubs just doing that, but okay, fine. At least that's an argument. There is no argument for Lance Lynn being on this team going forward. I mean, there really isn't. You know, they're not going to make up 4.5 games on the Cubs just with Lance Lynn. I think that you can get enough out of Luke Weaver and others that you need to trade Lance Lynn and get what you can get for him, because he's going to walk at the end of the year, and you're going to get this, you know, sandwich pick that's, you know, yay. But I don't know. It just feels like this front office is so paralyzed. I don't remember, I mean, ever since the Hayward deal is probably the biggest deal they made, and that was an off-season deal. I mean, you go back, you pretty much have to go back to the Alan Craig deal in 14 is the biggest deadline deal they've made in a while, and you could argue that was just to get rid of Alan Craig.
Yeah, and I think it, I don't know, I was trying to have this conversation with someone the other day, and Twitter's great, but it doesn't always allow for complete thoughts.
Or nuance.
Or nuance. But I think that this idea that if the Cardinals are sellers, it means they have to do what the White Sox have done and sell everyone for the sake of a bunch of top prospects. In many respects, the Cubs are doing that on a smaller scale. If this latest deal goes through with Detroit, the Cubs farm system isn't going to be as strong and as competitive as it had to be to get them to where they are. So it's not necessarily a scenario where I feel like, you know, we're talking about a potentially 500 team. To go from 500 to World Series champion, you gotta put a lot of work into that. And I think that's what the Cubs are doing. And they've shown that at this point they're willing to take that risk for what their farm system looks like a couple years from now. And how they can, you know, refeed that major league team. John Mozeliak's not going to do that. But I don't think he has to. I don't think it has to look like that. I think, you know, you move Lance Lynn, you move, a lot of people have talked about Trevor Rosenthal. I don't know that that's the wisest choice right now because somebody has to pitch the ninth inning for this team. And if you're not going to go get someone like a Britton, then you might still need Rosenthal a bit more than you need Lance Lynn, but there are still like 9 outfielders. So move one or two of them. If for no other reason, because then you have to give a chance on a consistent basis to a Harrison Bader or to bring Sierra back up later in the season, give him more playing time so that you know what you legitimately have in those players going forward. I just feel like it's a waste of a potentially wasted season anyway to do nothing and not learn anything about what you have to play with moving forward either. So I think that's why it's the most frustrating thing that the Cardinals could do to just stand pat because, you know, even if they don't make a move in order to win this season, they could make a move or three in order to be in a better position to know where they're at in the off season.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we were kind of talking about it on Twitter today about, you know, why did they bring up Harrison Bader knowing that Stephen Piscotty was about ready to come back? I mean, Stephen Piscotty could be back Tuesday when they get back into Milwaukee, and then you have to decide what to do. You know, why didn't they just bring up Sierra for this little time period? And John Doble pointed out, he said he figured they expected to actually have traded an outfielder by now before Piscotty came up. But it hasn't happened. And I get it takes two. You don't want to just give away players. But that said, I mean, some of these guys are just going to wither on the vine to some degree. If they don't get a chance to play, they're going to pass in their value. And I, you know, the front office should know that. I think that, again, I don't question how smart the front office is, and I know that they know much more than we do. But, you know, you kind of, as much as you could argue that John Mozeliak is a better general manager than Walt Jocketty, and I think that's, you know, probably fair. Walt Jocketty knew how to do the trade deadline. I mean, you know, there was always two or three interesting trades, usually it felt like, and with Walt at the helm, if nothing else, he got Mark McGwire, and that turned out okay. And I still remember, you know, two or three deals around the 2000 when they, you know, brought in Will Clark and others. Walt seemed to be pretty active at that time, and it feels like, you know, like you said, it's just getting stagnant. You know, last year I said, you know, they're kind of feel like they're going to trade like a Charlie Tilson for a reliever, and that's what they did. I'm kind of saying now, you know, that'd be Oscar Mercado for a reliever, and that, you know, very well may be what they do. And if that's the case, then if you're that predictable that I can predict your trades, you got to figure something out because that's not right. So I don't know. I mean, you're right. They really should be looking for next year. And if this year happens, great. But this is a team that hasn't been over 500 since the beginning of June. And even saying that, you know, kind of realizing they were really only over 500 for, like, what, 2 weeks?
Right.
I mean, because they started off so bad. They had that nice little run. Got over. And then, so, I mean, you know, 80% of the season, it's a sub-500 team. I mean, this in normal years, you've packed up and gone already. You're just lucky that the Cubs decided to play, you know, have that World Series hangover for so long. You're right. Their team's not worth investing in, but that doesn't mean you can't figure out what they've got going forward. And it's just a little bit frustrating to sit here and think that, you know, there was really no reason for Lance Lynn to start today. He should have been, you know, he should have been moved. And it feels like that's not going to happen now.
And I think it adds to that frustration to realize that there are a number of really quality teams that need starting pitching. Lance Lynn has to be on that list. So what are they possibly not offering in return for one of the better starting pitchers that are available? again, it kind of goes back to this idea about how John Mozeliak and his staff value certain players and how they come to that conclusion. Because it feels like if they really wanted to move Lance Lynn, they should have been able to do that. That it should not have been this difficult. And you got to have someone to trade with, but there are teams out there that need a starting pitcher like Lance Lynn. So unless they're just being really difficult about what they get in return, I can't comprehend why this is a thing that hasn't gone through, unless the front office is caught in this limbo of, do we try to make a run at this year or not? And if that's the case, I'll reiterate my point from last week. Just pick one. Because it's not doing anyone any good to kind of just tread water and see what happens. It's not doing the players any good, because you've got Tommy Pham on the one hand, who comes out after a loss yesterday and says that he might have a stroke before the season is over because he's so frustrated that they're not winning. And then you have, the scenario with Yadier Molina later in the week, where you're showcasing what appears to be a splintered clubhouse. I mean, that's what you're perpetuating. That's where you're treading water, is in this situation that no one wants to stay in. So if that's the case, then just pick one and everyone will be able to move on with their lives one way or the other.
Now, I will say, just to give them the benefit of the doubt, Sonny Gray and Yu Darvish are still out on the market. And those are two very big names that people sure are going to be very interested in. And it's always kind of felt like those names needed to get moved before Lance Lynn could get moved, just because some of the same teams were involved. So it's possible that Lance Lynn will still get moved tomorrow. It just feels like, and maybe the Cardinals pitched him because they didn't have much choice today. They couldn't really scratch him. Although if they had been planning ahead, they probably could have had a Memphis starter ready to go, but they didn't. And the bullpen wasn't going to cover those many innings because Mike Matheny runs through them like crazy. Matt Bowman. How does Matt Bowman comb his hair? I can't actually imagine how he can lift his arm this time. Anyway, a lot of people figure that with Lance Lynn starting today, he's probably staying. It probably means that. I will say that. But there is at least a chance that he'll move tomorrow as some of these other deals get moved. And maybe that, opens the floodgates. Maybe they'll trade Lance Lynn and Randall Grichuk for something. I don't know what. I don't know how you could do that. But
something.
Something. Right now, I'm okay with something. I think it's just like, oh, they are still awake up there. Okay, good deal.
Yeah.
Maybe Gersh wants one thing and Mo wants another thing. I don't, right now I don't know. But it feels like it's just a symptom of what we've seen over the last few years, is the Cardinals have just started to downgrade, degrade, I guess maybe the better word, from those, playoff teams. And it's just like you try to patch a hole here or there, but there's enough more that it just keeps gradually slinking into the muck. And it's going to take a significant, overhaul shakeup to get back to where the Cardinals are supposed to be. But that doesn't feel like that's what they want to do right now. All right. We've had so much fun talking about all this stuff tonight. We have been so optimistic and... I know we have cheered everybody's hearts by this, but hopefully next week Tara and I will have something a little bit better. Maybe we'll definitely know what the clubhouse, or what the, not the clubhouse, we won't know that ever, but we will know what the front office thinks of this season.
Unless I can get Tommy Pham to come on Bird Seats.
See, that would be pretty cool. if you could get Tommy, Tommy would tell you.
I know, that's why I said him specifically.
I get that, I've said this before, trading Tommy Pham right now is probably the smartest strategic move because he's never going to have more value. But if they trade Tommy Pham, that's a white flag, because yeah, this team is just nothing without Tommy Pham. We kind of saw that a little bit today, I think. You know, for the first half of that game, it just felt like nobody cared. It was just kind of going through the motions. And I realized Tijon Walker's a good pitcher, but it just, you know, then they hit the two-run home run and everything kind of woke up a little bit. But even so, it just felt like, it just didn't seem like a whole lot of motivation out there. And, you know, it's hard to read that, you know, when a pitcher's, you could be just a pitcher shutting them down. But it really was hard to believe that they weren't going through the motions.
Yeah, that's what Tommy Pham brings to this team right now, along with, you know, some of the best offense on the team and the most effort defensively. But besides that, he brings an edge. But I think that there's, I don't want to get too far off track here, but I think there's a lot more to that too. I mentioned a couple of weeks ago, I don't know if I said it on this show or just on Twitter, but I think not making the team out of spring training might be the best thing that ever happened to Tommy Pham. Because I think he had to go back to the drawing board and figure out how to be better consistently. Battling with the eye condition and some of the health issues just as far as the injury history has put him a little bit behind the eight ball in a number of seasons. And we talked about it out of spring training that, you know, this kind of seemed like it was now or never for Tommy Pham and he might not have a place. I think he took that personally, not from us, but I think he took the situation pretty personally and has done what you hope everyone in that situation will do, and that is just determined to be better. I think when he first came up and was on a bit of a tear, we all kind of looked at it and said, yeah, okay, that's great, but this is what he always does, and he's going to fall off a cliff, and then he's going to go back to being Tommy Pham. Well, he hasn't done that. And if I'm in that clubhouse, if I'm Mike Matheny, I'm trying to ride this for as long as you possibly can, because he is the best thing you have going for your team right now. And if Mike Matheny is not doing that, if he's not on board with the potential that Tommy Pham has to continue his success at the major league level, then I think, again, it circles back to Mike Matheny not doing his job particularly well, because you need Tommy Pham playing as well as he possibly can on this team, and playing with that edge and that determination that you don't see out of a lot of even the veteran guys at this point.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely an idea that if you did trade Pham here, that things would be, you know, very lackadaisical throughout the rest of the way. Especially, you know, and it kind of ties back to what we said at the beginning, but if Tommy Pham is one of those that is not happy with Mike Matheny and noticeably is not, and then gets moved, you know, what does that do for clubhouse chemistry as well? I mean, you're saying, okay, we're going to, instead of moving Mike Matheny, we're going to move some of you. That doesn't necessarily sit well either. That doesn't mean that's the front office is wrong for that, but, you know, there's implications there. Again, you know, if you can get something for Tommy Pham, or something very good for Tommy Pham right now, I think you have to do it, and you deal with the consequences. But, you know, and to some degree, it'd be nice to see Tommy Pham go someplace where he could win.
be a little bit more respected, perhaps.
You know, and have a chance. It's just, I mean, I feel like we've heard more about his eye problem this year and not having it for some degree than we did ever in the past. We just kind of, you know, wrote him off as, oh, you know, the league's catching up to him or anything like that. And the man couldn't actually see the baseball. So,
you know, minor details.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a problem. I don't know. But anyway, tomorrow should be, well, I don't know. It should be interesting. I don't know if it will be interesting or not, but we'll hope for it. Tara and I will be with you, like you said, next week. We'll talk about what they did do, what they didn't do, where the Cardinals are at. And maybe even, I don't know, every week I see, hey, we're going to be, maybe we can talk about a 500 team. And we never get to talk about a 500 team, so I'm not going to say it this week. So, for Tara, I'm Daniel. Good night.
Hey, Cardinals fans. Thanks for listening to this week's show.
If you liked what you heard, you can find us on iTunes. Just search Gateway to Baseball Heaven under podcasts and click subscribe. While you're there, feel free to give us 5 of those little gold stars or even a quick review. And tune in next time as we break down another week in baseball heaven.